League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Two mics, and this, of course, is On the Record, the very successful podcast series that started on a whim and has now become a staple, really, of the broadcasting community.
That's right.
Mike Parry is the voice you can hear behind me. I'm Mike Graham. What's going on with your hair, by the way?
What do you mean?
It's all kind of sticking up.
Well,
have you got some kind of static thing?
No, I wash it every day, and I come out of the shower and I rub it with a cotton towel. Yeah, and it tends a pure cotton towel. Indian cotton, actually.
It's not Egyptian cotton, because that's the one you really want. If you've got Indian cotton, you're in the wrong place.
Like an Egyptian. It is Egyptian cotton.
Yeah, you see.
But Egypt, of course, is a country in the continent of Africa.
Uh-huh.
So Africa and India, the only two continents in the world that have elephants.
What?
And that was the connection.
I see. Yeah. So that was why you were easily confused.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But what I can see when your head is bowed.
Yes.
Right? And I'm not suggesting your head is bowed at any time, but when you're looking down at your journals, I can see that there's a sort of shock of white hair coming out of your head.
Good.
But it's very sparsely growing.
No.
It's very sparsely growing.
Well, people want me to put this fish paste on it.
Fish paste?
Yeah. It's,
what, you mean like sardine tomato?
No, it's like a hair filler outer. You know
hair
what I mean?
Filler outer.
What's it called?
What's that stuff? You can get that stuff you shake on it, right?
No.
Have you seen that?
No, that's dry. That's dry shampoo.
Yeah, but it looks.
It drops out.
No. You shake this stuff on it and it makes it look like you've got full head hair.
This fish paste is not fish paste, but it's called that because it's
fish
like
paste.
It's a gum you put in your hair.
Gum.
It thickens your hair, you know?
Really? Yeah, but yours doesn't need thickening, it needs replacing.
Yeah, well, I'm not getting into that. Listen, we're supposed to be talking about.
Well, I know what we're going to do. We've got much to catch up on, right?
Yeah,
but I understand.
Yeah.
I understand that you are friends with somebody at the Wayne Rooney Hair Transplant Clinic in Harley Street.
The Triple Clinic?
You put out a tweet about that.
Yeah, I did.
So can you recommend yourself the hair transplant man?
I've been there and I've spoken to them.
Why? And,
well, because I'm thinking of it, obviously.
Well, you're thinking of getting a hair transplant?
Maybe.
How much does that cost?
About
£5,000.
£5,000? Yeah, yeah.
What, per hair follicle?
No. Well, no, for 5,000, yeah.
Well, if you got a hair transplant, would it be white hair you put in or ginger?
When Elton John got it first done, it was in the very early days of hair transplants.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, when he turned himself upside down,
the
it
hair
all fell out.
Him.
No, it all fell out.
Really?
Because what they did is, you know, they have like what I would say is a little kind of. It's like a screwdriver with a circular thing on the end, and they take follicles from the back of your neck and plant them into the top of your head, and it's supposed to grow, but unfortunately it grows whispery.
Right.
But the problem is they didn't seal him in properly, so when they turned him upside down...
Why did they turn him upside down?
To examine the head at every angle, hair at every angle, it all fell out. So I'm not
doesn't sound like I've done it very well.
But I mean, if you think of people like Wayne Rooney, who's had it done, think of people like...
Who else has had it done successfully?
The Northern Irish actor, who's done lots of good things. James Nesbitt.
Yeah.
He's had it done.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, look good for him. So I am thinking about that, definitely.
All right. Okay, anyway, what I should say is that we are, of course, in the process of recording a podcast.
That's right.
And this week's podcast, this day's podcast, is in fact another Porky Review of Books. It's a highly successful, relatively new feature that we've been doing.
Oh, absolutely.
This is where you tell us which books we should be reading.
Well, I've been reading all the good books.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, you know that I'm a student of history, obviously.
I do know
that. I got three passes in history. two at O level, one at
no,
A
you
level.
Did not.
Yes,
rubbish.
I did. Yes, I did.
You can't
social economic history.
No, one, there's only one history exam,
and then European history.
No, there's only one history.
Yeah,
right. You don't
yeah.
get different results and different exams.
Anyway, European history, of course, I'm particularly interested
have
in
you got
because
certificates
of course
for each of those.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Have you would like to bring them in one day?
Yeah, well, yeah. If I feel I need, I have to
have
justify
they also
myself,
been made by your mate Steve?
Which I don't. No.
Are you sure?
No, absolutely
yeah.
not. No.
Okay.
So what I was going to say is that of course one particularly proud moment in our national history
yeah.
was the Battle of Waterloo.
Waterloo.
I mean, the Battle of Trafalgar also, but
yeah.
Trafalgar came in 1805,
uh-huh.
Waterloo 1815. One
right.
was a naval battle, the other one was a land battle.
Right.
Napoleon was involved in both.
Yes.
I'm talking about the Emperor Napoleon the First,
yeah.
okay?
The one who was killed by his wallpaper.
Killed by his wallpaper yeah. when he was in what was it?
St. Helena.
On St. Helena when
yeah.
he was in, what's it called when you send somebody away and say you're
staying?
Exile. In exile,
yeah.
that's it, yeah.
But like Exile on Main Street.
Not Exile on Main Street. So anyway, look. Thank God I found a book which tells the truth about Napoleon. It's
yeah.
called The Man Behind the Myth,
okay.
written by Adam Zamoyski.
Zamoyski, okay.
a top historical biographer.
Okay.
And here's the best thing I can say. He sums up Napoleon as a rather pathetic creature, bedeviled by massive insecurities, social, intellectual, physical, and most of all, sexual.
He sounds a bit like you.
People
have often accused you of having a Napoleonic complex.
No.
Now we know why.
No.
Because you are indeed Napoleon.
Yeah. No.
Aren't you Napoleon?
No, I'm not Napoleon at all.
Well, just go through those again.
No.
Just go through them again.
What do you mean to go through them again? I've told you already.
Well, go through those particular...
Bedeviled by massive insecurity,
right,
social, intellectual,
social,
physical,
yes.
and sexual.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Yeah.
That's all right.
Well, you can fuck off, mate, when he's
that's
trying to make, you know, trying
well,
to make...
don't need to swear.
...personal judgments on my character and
I'm
my personality.
I'm just saying that you have a lot of similarities.
No.
I don't know enough about your sexual life to say that that's included.
Not
but the other stuff,
yeah.
you do have massive insecurities, it's true.
No, not at all. Now... Napoleon was an oddball from an early age.
Yep.
As a kid, he didn't like snowball fights because he was frightened of them.
I've been in a snowball fight, do you remember?
No.
Yeah, it's
no.
on YouTube.
Where?
We had a snowball fight in the studio once.
Oh, that was mock snowballs,
yeah, but
you idiot.
I beat you like 10-4. You were useless at it, and I kept ducking down. You kept missing me.
They were fluffy snowballs.
Yeah,
they
I
weren't
know.
Real snowballs.
But I beat you at that, though.
Anyway, it wasn't the right conditions. It wasn't cold, and there weren't snowballs.
Oh, okay.
Right, but, you know, from the age of 5, he would play with a sword as a child because he was a bully, okay?
Yeah, that's you.
There is, of course, this long-ranging mythical story
yeah.
about the fact that when he was born, a comet passed the Earth.
Oh, really?
And that gave him, you know...
Well, superpowers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Not a load of crap.
Yeah. But, of course, it never happened. But anyway...
No. Was he actually French, or did he come from somewhere else?
He came from Corsica.
He was Corsican,
he's Corsican,
he?
Yeah. Well, that is French. But anyway, the one we want to concentrate on, obviously, the one that everybody's interested in... is his lack of shaggability.
What
okay?
about Not Tonight Josephine?
Exactly.
Saying,
that's
not Tonight
exactly,
Josephine,
exactly.
I can't get it up.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like that. It's a bit like that because we've all seen these adverts. I've seen a brandy advert, haven't I? Where
brandy?
He's in his tent on
yeah.
the battlefield,
is
which is Waterloo.
Courvoisier?
Yeah, Courvoisier, something like that. And he's wondering what to do, and he can either take another brandy or he can shag Josephine.
Right.
And he picks up the brandy, looks at Josephine and says... Not tonight, Josephine, okay?
Well, so he's an alcoholic as well, then?
Well, insinuating that he likes his brandy, but he likes his...
Well, there are
you know,
many
his,
men who are like that.
Getting his rocks
I should
away.
Say at this
you
point
I mean?
That Porky's doing what can only be described as a disgraceful reenactment
well,
of the Shagaroonie scenario.
Exactly. The Rogerisation technique employed by Napoleon was apparently not very good.
No. Well, he was quite small, wasn't he? Quite a short bloke. He was quite short.
Yeah, well, he wasn't that short. He was 5'6".
Are you sure?
So that's not bad for
well,
those days.
That's pretty small for a bloke.
Well, in those days, everybody
I mean,
was about 5 foot six. No. Yes, it's much smaller than me.
Yeah.
Much smaller than
I mean,
me.
When you're 5 foot 8 3/4,
yeah, I am.
Right?
Yeah, but anyway, the point is that old Josephine, right? Far from, you know, knocking on his bedroom door every night. Lots of times he lived in tents on the battlefield and all that.
Right.
She was, in fact, shagging quite a lot of his senior officers.
Really?
And got a reputation
really?
As the camp bike. Yeah.
Camp bike?
Yeah, the camp bike. Except they didn't have any bikes.
Really, I don't think you can use that sort of term in this Me Too, hashtag Me Too area.
Why not?
I think you call it the office bike.
No, she's
There's
a camp
no
bike.
There's no way you
yeah.
could call that. Call
No.
Where was she stationed, if you can
Well, the
that.
Problem was, what the... you know, what the great military commanders in those days used to do is, I mean, they would always take a mistress on tour with them, you know?
Yeah, right.
A bit like, as I've said to you in the past, a lot of my my former Fleet Street colleagues would, you know, have a great domestic situation at home. But, you know, if one of the secretaries in the office was their mistress, I'm like, they'll take them.
Well, there was also a phrase, you may remember this one. Trial wife. Remember that?
The trial wife.
Well, if you were covering a long trial went on in somewhere Bristol Crown Court, Gloucester Crown Court, the Fred West trial, for example, almost everyone who was at that trial ended up shagging each other. So they all had trial wives.
You mean men and women, yeah?
Men and women, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I'm not talking about homosexuality.
Oh, I see,
talking about all the people that...
Nothing wrong with homosexuality, of course.
Well, you say that. I can possibly comment.
Legal, you know.
It's legal. It's been legal for a while, But the point is that people who went to cover Fred West's trial went on for about 3.5 months.
Yes.
They were away from home for 3.5 months.
That's right,
You know, they were waiting there. Sure. They were staying in hotels together.
Sure,
there was an awful lot of it going on.
Oh, yeah.
And many people who covered that trial, I don't wish to name any names.
Yes.
Because they're all still around. Talked to me about having trial husbands and trial wives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and they basically ended up bunking up together.
I've seen all that happen before. I sent one lady once on a foreign job, and it was to, you know, I don't know, somewhere like...
Mogadishu?
No, it wasn't that far away. It was somewhere in Europe. But the story went on for about 10 days, wherever it was. And she went there as a single woman, came back as a fiancé.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, from somebody else that had gone out for the story?
Yeah, that's right, from the Mirror. She was working on the Express. Her name was Jane.
And you don't have to tell us who she was.
Well, I'm not telling you who she
Jane
was.
Jane who?
Well, and she...
Reporter.
Yeah. And she got together with a guy called Steve.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know
right,
what you mean,
And,
all happened on a foreign, did it?
It certainly did, And, and you know what? Years later...
Yeah. They've got children. They're still married, though.
Well, I was about to say, when they got married, I got a note from... in fact, I tell you what, it was a freebie. Because that's where a lot of romances start, on freebies.
Well, that's different, though. That's not working, though.
No, it was a freebie. And I think it was something like the Cayman Islands or something.
Oh, yeah?
Something in South America.
You just said it wasn't as far away as
It was.
Mogadishu.
It was. And
the Cayman Islands quite a long way away.
Yeah, and I got a thank you note saying, you know, thank you...
Jane Langton. Is her name, isn't it?
Well, I didn't say that. You said you weren't going to name names.
Well, you just named Jane and Steve.
Well, you know, if you want to name Jane, Steve, and you. Anyway,
we saw Steve not that long ago. Do you remember he turned up in the back of a pub we were sitting in one day?
Yes.
Because he still works over at, you know, Thames.
Yes, that's right.
Street.
Yeah, that's right. When it was there, but it's moving to Canary Wharf now, isn't it? Because it's been bought by. But do you know what? The other thing that was interesting about Steve on that day, he said, "Oh, fellas, you know, let me buy you a pint." And he said, "Look, we can't. We're working because we're doing a video, in the garden." Yeah.
Why do we say that? We normally have a drink when we're working, don't we?
Well, I think we probably wanted just to get rid of him or something. You know what
that's
I mean?
A bit harsh.
Yeah. Well, it is. But the other thing he said was. He said, I said, didn't I read something about you having a kidney problem? He said, oh, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I said, and did you get a kidney transplant at the end? He said, oh, yes, I did.
Yeah,
I said,
kidney transplant?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me any of this.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me any of this.
I said, and he said, oh, I said, well, that's very interesting. He said, yes. He said, I've now got three kidneys. And I said, sorry, what do you mean you've got three kidneys?
Three kidneys?
Yeah. He said, well, what they do is these days, they don't bother taking your knackered kidney out. They just put the new one in.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds a bit weird.
Yeah, well, it's just a bit
what's
weird.
What's the point of having a kidney that doesn't work still inside you?
No idea, but that's apparently what they do.
How
that's
bizarre.
Apparently medical science.
All right, okay.
Anyway.
Anyway, I don't know how you got onto that subject.
Anyway, getting back to Josephine,
Josephine, yeah.
Josephine thought he was an absolute useless lover.
Yeah.
That his mind was always, you know, about military things and all that kind of stuff, his wife Josephine cheated on him relentlessly. This is a passage from the book.
Okay,
so she became his wife in the end, not just his mistress. Okay, right. His wife Josephine cheated on relentlessly and often made fun of the febrile frenzy of his boyish ardour.
Oh, really?
So she described him as like a little puppy dog.
So he wasn't very sophisticated in the sack.
So she would, what she'd do is, you know, she'd go in a like a negligee, flash a bit of leg, flash a bit of something else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know.
And he would get a bit carried away.
Yeah. And then she said he was like a little puppy, you know, and he'd be lapping around with his tongue hanging out, you know. And the other thing was, she didn't feel he was a suitable father to her children.
Did she have children by him then?
No, she didn't want children by him.
No.
So she said, look, I tell you what, we've done a lot of this and nothing's happened.
Yeah.
You're infertile.
Oh, dear.
Okay? And therefore, I am wasting my time being your wife.
Yeah.
I suggest you go and find a mistress if you want a child, okay? And she said, Napoleon was like a hyperactive child. He was unable to ever sit still.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had to take him, because he was so small, sit him on my lap, and stroke his head, calming him down long enough for him to be able to get on with his military activities.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
I've seen a lot of similarities. No, I'm seeing a lot of similarities between you and him in this particular scenario. But tell me, so Josephine eventually had kids by other men then?
That's right.
See? But was he still her husband?
Well, he was in exile then, so he wouldn't have known about it.
So she didn't go in exile.
You can't get together on the Rogerisation scene if one of you's in St. Helena and the other one is in Paris.
No, indeed. Okay. So she didn't go to St. Helena then?
No, she didn't go. No, she didn't want to go.
He went in exile.
And if she'd gone, she'd have died from the poisons in the wallpaper as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, look.
Well, that just teaches you, if you keep saying not tonight, Josephine.
That's right, yeah.
Josephine.
In the end, she said, okay, not tonight with you, Napoleon, but I will go and get some nobbing somewhere else.
Nobbing.
You know? Yes.
Very well put.
It's a French word.
Thank you very much indeed.
But anyway, just to finish this off, he wasn't even a great military commander, okay?
Well, that's bollocks, isn't it?
No, he was clearly a great military
commander.
He was hopeless.
No, he
completely fucked up Waterloo because he invaded the British. And who else's army was at Waterloo? The British and...
The Spanish?
No. It was the Habsburgs, wasn't it?
What, the Germans?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Austro-Hungarians?
Belgians? A few Belgians. But he decided to attack them head-on, and he got massacred, wiped out.
I think it was the Belgians. Because I think he was fighting on too many fronts.
Yeah, it was.
It's the mistake that a lot of people make.
That's right.
The mistake the Germans made in the Second World War. Fighting on too many fronts.
But the one I really condemn him for, because I'd already known about this before I read this latest book about
him,
was that he tried to invade Egypt.
Right.
You know that?
Yeah, why did he do that?
Well, he tried to invade Egypt because he thought, being like at the top of Africa, it would be the gateway to all the riches Africa would provide.
Uh-huh.
And, 200 years later, he's found to
be
quite right, yeah. The problem was that they arrived in the Red Sea and they had to march like 150 miles to what is now Cairo.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So he told everyone to get off the boat and march.
Like an Egyptian.
March like an Egyptian.
Yeah. You've already sung the Egyptian.
But anyway, the problem was that he was completely hopeless military commander because he didn't arrange any supplies for the journey. Half of his army...
Yeah.
Died of thirst or exhaustion on the march to Cairo.
Yeah, that's not very smart, is
it? Okay?
Yeah.
Now, he was sitting on a big white horse, of course, which was changed every 3 days, because the horses kept dropping dead, okay?
And also, were the Egyptians up to much in those days? I mean, when you invade a place like Egypt, did they give up much resistance?
No.
Probably not.
I think it was a load of people called the Mufti, wasn't it? Were the Egyptian soldiers?
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And he had his own water wagon.
Mm.
So while he was marching at the front of the column on a horse, in searing temperatures, like 100 degrees,
yeah.
And his own water wagon, his troops coming up behind didn't have any food, didn't have any water, were dying of both starvation, thirst, and sheer physical degeneration.
Exhaustion.
Because you're not like walking on a road like the M1. Your feet go 6 inches into sand at every pace.
6 inches?
6 inches.
No.
Sand in the Sahara Desert is... fucking soft,
Surely
okay?
Your feet don't go in 6 inches.
Yeah, they do. When you're trying to climb a sand mountain, right, you're at an angle of 45 degrees.
When was the last time you tried to climb a sand mountain?
Probably at, Pathelli Beach near Rhyl when I was a kid. I used to love climbing the sand mountain.
But that's the sand dunes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's nothing like the Sahara.
Yeah, but you get the feeling for it, don't you? You get the feeling for it, right? So it says in this book, Napoleon's success is often attributed to his awareness of his soldiers' needs, his understanding that an army marches on its stomach. And yet, this was all complete hype. In 1798, he was in such a hurry to capture Cairo, he failed to take account of the heat of the Egyptian desert in July. Deprived of water bottles, his troops died of heat stroke, or many of them driven to suicide by the madness of the burning sun on their heads.
Suicide?
Because there was no cover,
So you just kill yourself?
Eh?
Well, you just kill yourself because you're a bit hot.
One soldier ran up to him.
Who's written this fucking
book? One, a very, very good guy called Adam Samoyska, I told you.
Samoyska.
One soldier ran up to Napoleon and said, Bastardo! And then cut his own... What's your problem?
There's no way this happened.
Yeah, he did.
He doesn't even know that.
He did.
No, he's just making shit up
He's
now.
Not.
It's this guy that Mike Parry of Italy.
He does not know how
anybody behaved in those days.
This is from the records of the march.
No, right, okay.
Ran up to him and said, Napoleon, bastardo! And then slit his own throat.
Yeah, right.
In front of the general, like Napoleon,
right.
And said, before he bled to death...
Uh-huh.
Ici votre travail.
Here's your work.
This is your work.
Yeah, you
this
see?
Is your work.
I'm
yeah,
good
well
at French.
Done.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed. Well, yeah. I don't believe a fucking word of that for a start, apart from the bit about Josephine.
Yeah.
And I do believe that bit, because any man who does not properly involve himself in the Rogerisation of his woman will lose that woman.
Oh, she was getting
shagged. And you will know
left,
that
right,
better than anybody else.
Left, right, and centre.
Well, that doesn't make it sound like a bad thing.
Just to sum this up, right?
Yeah, have you seen the time, by the
way? Just to sum this up, what it said was that the one thing Napoleon did believe in was himself.
Yeah.
He had a massively inflated opinion of his own worth.
Okay? There again. I mean, so many similarities with you. It's extraordinary.
During the Italian campaign, which again he failed at, he took an artist on the campaign with him.
I want to draw pictures of him.
He had 500 images drawn of himself.
You are
okay?
Napoleon. Are
500
you,
images.
You, hang on. Are you not the man that presented his own mother with a portrait of himself?
I did, yes.
For
I did,
a Christmas present.
Yeah, but she wanted it, you know.
Well, you know, you sound like Napoleon to
me. And what he did was, like, he sent these images back to Paris all the time and then had the first world's first ever PR agency to put them up on lampposts all over Paris saying, you know, the Emperor Napoleon is conquering Italy. But he wasn't, because there was no newsreels to prove that he was a twat.
So he was a liar as well.
Liar.
Fucking extraordinary. I've never heard anybody more suited to being the new Porky.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you should be playing him in the next movie they make of him. This is the two mics. We are in the middle of the Porky Review of Books.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So what else have you been looking at?
Right, tell you what else I've been looking at, mate. Now, we have mentioned briefly Peter Grant, haven't we?
We have indeed.
Peter Grant, of course, was the legendary road manager of the Led Zeppelin group.
He
was. Brought them to great prominence and fame.
Well, he basically changed the face of rock and roll. He changed the music business single-handedly.
Yes, that's
because
right.
Because he believed that, in fact, the promoters should not gain control of the business. They're all twats.
Yeah.
The record company should not gain control.
Yeah.
It should be the artists themselves, represented by people like him, that should call the shots.
Yes, that's right.
And he was absolutely right.
That's right. Now, let me tell you. So I've read the book. It's called Bring It On Home. Peter Grant, Led Zeppelin and Beyond, and it's written by Mark Blake, okay?
Mark Blake.
Who is a rock and roll...
I don't think I know him, but I know his name.
Yeah. So, anyway, Peter Grant is described as a bear-like creature.
Yeah.
6'3" tall, 300 pounds, and he had a chilling sense of menace with anybody he dealt with, okay?
Right. He
started off on the road with people like Eddie Cochran, who was one of his charges.
Summertime Blues.
So, and there ain't no king but the summertime blues.
That was that's Eddie Cochran,
That's right. And he called Eddie Cochran a fucking lunatic.
Did he?
But didn't realise that the people he deal with later in his life would be even worse.
Right.
Gene Vincent, who he had to manage, was a chronic alcoholic who was also crippled by a motorcycle accident, okay?
Yeah.
But that meant that he had to carry a crutch around, and it meant within his crutch he used to carry miniature bottles of sweet martini.
That's one drink I could never stomach, sweet martini. It's the one drink, honestly, I mean, there's not many drinks I can't drink.
Is there a non-sweet martini?
Well, there's the white martini and the red martini. The red one is the sweet one.
Right, the white one is Chino or
You're thinking of Cinzano.
Cinzano's
a brand,
right,
as is martini.
Right.
The overall catch-all name is vermouth.
Vermouth.
If you're talking an American accent. Vermouth, I think we call it.
Vermont.
So the white one tends to be, you know, drier, and the red one tends to be sweeter.
Okay. Anyway, on one occasion, managing Chuck Berry had this habit of never going on stage until he had the money.
That's right.
In cash, in his...
He insisted on it.
Yeah, exactly, So he organised this concert, Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry is in his dressing room, and he's saying, "I'm not going until you give me the money." And he hadn't got the money from the box office. So he went round a few bars in town, smashing the cigarette machines.
Are you talking about Chuck Berry or Peter Grant?
I'm talking about Peter Grant.
Oh, okay.
He went round with a crowbar, started smashing up the machines and taking the money out of those machines.
Okay.
Now, you and I, of course, lived in America in the days when you put quarters into machines,
that's
not
right.
dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
So he must have accumulated a bucket load of these quarters. And he took them back. And although it wasn't enough money, Chuck Berry was so impressed by his efforts, he said, OK, I'll go on stage, but I'm going to get money after the stage. I'm going to find somebody to come here to shoot you, which was a good enough incentive for Graham to do it, OK?
Right.
But he loved all that, OK? He first worked as a bouncer at the Two Eyes Coffee Bar in Soho.
Yeah, because he's a British guy, wasn't he?
British guy, yeah, absolutely. He became a wrestler. He was billed as His Royal Highness Count Bruno Alacido of Milan.
Okay.
Okay. And during the time as a wrestler, he perfected a technique because he was such a big guy with big sort of hands and fingers like sausage rolls, where he would jab his opponent just under the rib cage and break one or two of his ribs.
Really?
Yes, and that would incapacitate his opponent.
He was supposedly a very intimidating figure.
A very intimidating figure. Mm. But he used that to great effect later in life when he came up against a promoter or a doorman or anybody who wasn't doing what he was doing. He'd give them the four-finger jab in the rib cage and break a couple of their ribs.
Which would, I'm sure, persuade them to his point of view.
I broke my ribs once. Terribly, terribly painful.
Did you? How did you break yours?
I fell down the stairs on a tube station.
You fell down the stairs of the tube station?
Yeah, I did, yes. Maybe. I can't quite remember. But
what station was it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Probably embankment or something like that.
How many times have you fallen down the tube station stairs?
Once.
Well, so why don't you remember where it was?
Well, I was coming home through London. It could have been any station.
Really?
I could have been anywhere.
Was it after a football match?
No, it was after a lunchtime drinking session.
Lunchtime?
Yes, that's right. Well, lunchtime into evening. It's about half past eight in the evening.
So, from 1 o'clock in the afternoon drinking?
Yes.
You fell down?
Probably earlier.
You obviously blabbering.
Probably earlier. I was probably started about half ten, 11, something like that.
I broke mine. I think I cracked mine rather than broke mine.
Yeah.
In a similar situation. I was living in Scotland, and I'd been out for dinner with a mate of mine, talking politics, and I'd come home, and in fact, I must not have been out for dinner because I must have been just out for a drink.
Mm.
So I came home and took my dinner upstairs to where the mother of my children was.
Yeah.
And sat on the bed, ate the dinner, talked to her.
Well, you eat your dinner in the
bedroom?
Well,
we had this very weird house, which was sort of a single column house.
Right.
If you know what I mean. It's one of those townhouses.
Well,
right?
Like four floors.
It was on four floors.
Right.
But it had sort of one room per floor.
Good God.
So you'd have you'd go in, there was French doors, there was a lounge.
Didn't you have a proper dining table?
We didn't actually have a dining table.
No?
Well, no, we had a dining table, but it was in the living room, which was downstairs.
So why didn't you eat there?
Because she was upstairs.
Well, you should have told her to come down.
Well, she was in bed.
Well, what time of night was it?
About 11.
So why did you want to go and disturb her while you're munching your dinner?
Because I was pissed. I'd been out all night. She wasn't very happy, so I thought I'd go and talk to her.
Right.
And,
well, you should have gone and talked to her for 10 minutes and said, look, I'm just going downstairs for my dinner. Thank you very much for cooking it for me.
Well, thanks very much for telling me how I should run my life domestically.
Yeah,
I'm just explaining to you what happened. So I went upstairs. I then finished. I said, right, I'm going to take the plate downstairs.
Yes.
And for some reason, I had two plates in my hand.
Right.
So maybe she was eating as well. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, I walked in a very tight sort of spiral staircase.
Yes.
And I lost my footing.
Right.
And I fell and cracked my ribs right on the stairs.
Yeah.
And I was lying on, but I was so pissed.
Yes.
Right? I was lying on the floor in the living room. And I wasn't feeling any pain.
No.
I said, I'm fine.
Yes.
And she said, no, I don't think you are. She said, I think we've got to take you to hospital.
Yeah.
And I was like, no problem. So I tried to get up. I couldn't get up.
No, exactly.
I could not get off the floor.
Exactly.
Did you have the same problem?
Because of the mass weight you had. Well, people pick me up. That's the thing about a tube station.
They
pick
you
up. All right, yeah. I said, yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, don't worry, you know.
And so did you go home?
I went home, but the next morning I woke up in excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And even when I got them strapped up, because they wrapped like that, plastic stuff around.
See, mine, they didn't do that to
me. No, they did to me.
They said you can't actually strap ribs.
No, they said they wrapped the, like the EcoFoils, the BakoFoil stuff, but it's plastic, you know what I mean?
BakoFoil?
Yeah.
What do you mean, like cling film?
Cling film. They wrapped cling film around me. Yeah. And they said, one word of advice was, Barry, don't laugh.
Yeah.
And they're absolutely right if you laughed.
Laughing was painful. I was sitting at home for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And in those days, I worked in not very far away. And I said, no, do you know what? I might as well go to work.
Yes.
Because I'm sitting here, I can't do anything.
Yes.
I'm going to go to work. And I was fine in the car until I had to turn left.
Exactly.
Because it was my right rib.
Yeah,
and it was excruciating agony.
I know. But let me tell you this. Let me tell you this, right? I went into work on the Friday. Probably in work for a couple of days. And Alvin Martin said to me, you all right there, Mike? Because I had like a straitjacket on my body, if you see what I mean. Because
hang on. They wouldn't give me one of those. They said to me, well, there's no point in strapping it. You can't strap it.
No, they strapped it with the cling film.
So it was a corset you were wearing.
Well, like but it made a cling film. Made a cling film.
Of course it made a cling film.
Well, they literally wrapped the cling film around me.
Right.
And Alvin said, oh, what's the problem? I said, I broke my ribs. He said, oh, it's terribly painful. Don't laugh, you know. I said, I'm trying not to, you know. And he said, how did you do it? And I said, oh, you know, never does a good deed go
unpunished.
Yeah. He said, what happened? I said, well, I was on the tube. I said, and a lady there with a pram couldn't get her pram onto the tube.
So by this stage, you were inventing a story to sound like you weren't pissed.
Yes. Uh-huh. And he said, and he was very concerned. He's a nice guy, Alvin.
He said, the trouble with Alvin Martin is he believes what you say.
Yeah, and he said, what happened? And I said, well, I picked up the lady's pram, the front of the pram, because in those days you had to do that sort of thing.
I actually did that recently in real life.
Oh, well done, yeah. I said, and as I moved it into the train, I said, the idiot who was holding the door let the door go, and it smashed into my ribs. Uh-huh. And I said, you know, and I didn't do anything at the time. I didn't complain because I was helping this lady.
Right.
And he said, that's so good.
So you're claiming that your good Samaritan deed had got you a broken rib. That's a shocking thing to do.
One time, by the way, talking about Alvin in Munich at the 2006 World Cup, I didn't have a drink for the first something like 18 days of the World Cup.
Really?
Literally didn't.
No drinking at all?
No, well, I tell you what, when we were based near Frankfurt, and I didn't really want to mix with the youngsters, and there were mostly youngsters in those days, you know. And so each evening, when they went and had like their four pints or something, you know, in the bar, you know, and got absolutely trolleyed on four pints because they weren't experienced like me, I would just go down the road to a pizza bar.
What was it, Gelsenkirchen? Was that the name of the place?
No, Gelsenkirchen was where England went out of the World Cup.
So you weren't there?
Oh, yeah, I was there, yeah, but that was the night we went out against, must have been Portugal.
Yeah, that was the Rooney.
That's right. And Gelsenkirchen was also where Jose Mourinho, by the way, won his first Champions League with Porto. Believe it or not. Yeah, it was, yeah.
No,
Porto beat Monaco 2-0 in that ground. But anyway, point of the story is...
Yeah. So 18 days without a drink?
I find that hard to believe. I would go to the pizza bar down the road, you know, because I didn't want to...
Just have a carafe of wine.
Didn't want to get down with the kids. No, I would have a pizza and I'd have two bottles of beer, okay?
Just two bottles of beer. That's all?
That's all.
I don't believe
you. At all, every night. No,
I don't believe you.
No, seriously.
You know where you can only have two
Because every morning at 5.30, I had to get up, get Mike, what's his name around?
Bovill,
with the Satlink, and we went to Frankfurt Main Station and sat up there, and I did live inserts into the record show every morning.
Okay.
So I had to be up early every morning.
Yeah.
Mike Bovill never spoke to me, by the way.
I don't blame him.
I mean,
he's not one of your biggest fans, is he?
Well, he was deputed to drag this Satlink all the way to Frankfurt Station.
Yes.
I'd never offered to carry anything for him.
Right.
He had the Satling who was pulling and two bags.
Slave?
And two bags. Well, you know, he was the technician and I was the talent.
You were the talent.
Yeah. And
did you ever interview anybody? Or just sort of
absolutely fantastic. Right. You know, top of the stairs, I see some Mexican football fans going off, you know, from Frankfurt Station to somewhere like Bonn or something for the Mexico game.
Yeah.
And I'd get them, and then we'd all sing Mexican songs, you know, live into the show.
Like what? What's the Mexican songs?
You know, Viva España or something like that.
They're Spanish,
though. Yeah, well, no, they're Mexican, but I mean, you know, they speak Spanish.
Viva España is one of the most popular songs in Mexico,
So anyway... And about the 18th or 19th day...
I thought you were talking about Peter Grant, by the way.
No, I'm talking about Alvin at the moment.
Yeah.
So we go back to Berlin, because I'm based... Berlin or Munich. I think it was Berlin. And Alvin said, I said, come on, Alvin, why don't we go out for dinner and leave the youngsters on their own?
Alvin's quite a calm character.
Alvin's very calm.
He strikes me as a bloke that drinks a lot.
Yeah, no, well, he'll have a few.
No,
he likes red wine.
Does
he? Likes a lot of red wine.
Okay.
So Alvin said, yeah, that's great, Mike, let's go. Because remember, he was born in the shadow of Goodison Park.
Yeah.
The home in which he bought, if you leaned out the front door of his little terraced house, one of those streets down to Goodison, and turned your head left, you could see Goodison Park.
Okay.
That's how close he was.
Right.
And they didn't give him a trial. Oh, they gave him a trial, but they didn't take him on.
So that's how he ended up at West Ham.
That's right, yeah. Anyway, point of the story is we went out had a great dinner in a really great restaurant, you know. Met a few football fans in the restaurant who were very impressed.
Yeah.
I thought they were impressed by me, but then I realised it was probably Alvin Martin,
probably Alvin,
the international.
The former centre-half of England.
That's right, centre-half of
More
England.
Than
Then we got back to the hotel, and I said, come on, Alvin, let's have a couple of late ones in the bar.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I think I'm done, Mike. You know, I said, no, you're not. Come on, I'm going to the bar here. And we had a couple of drinks, and then... These rowdy Aussies came in because Australians were there.
Were they in the World Cup?
They were in the World Cup, and I know that for a fact because, of course, one of our colleagues, Mr. Scott Taunton, who is an Aussie, was also out there.
He was there.
And, of course, he was, you know, on edge about how Australia would... Anyway.
Was this when your guy from Everton was playing for Australia?
Tim Cahill, yeah. Yes, that's right, absolutely, yeah. Anyway, these Australians started to annoy me with their banter and all that, so I got aggressive with them, you know, and I actually pushed my chair back, got up and said, you know, trouble with you is you're a load of wankers, you know, something like that, you know, something
convicts,
to that effect.
A bit harsh.
I didn't do the convicts thing, you know, I said, you know, you want to fucking start it or something like that, you know, completely out of order, shouldn't have happened.
No.
And Alvin...
Sometimes you make these mistakes.
Yeah, Alvin jumped in the way and put his arms up. Alvin is 6'3", you know. I said, hey, lads, I'm really sorry. I think he's had too much to drink, you know. They said, well, you better take him to bed then, hadn't you?
Yeah.
Otherwise, he won't have anything more to drink, will he? You know, and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So, good
Why
guy, Alvin.
Why was all this trouble wherever you go?
I wasn't trying to cause trouble. Yeah. Anyway, to get back to the book.
So is that the story? That's the end of the story?
No, I haven't finished the book yet.
Oh, okay.
The other thing he used to do was, no detail escaped Peter Grant.
Yes.
He routinely carried around in a pouch stitched into his clothes $200,000 in banknotes.
Blimey.
Okay?
Yeah.
He preferred the cash economy. And
he also carried a gun, didn't he?
He carried a gun because if he found anybody who was trying to profit on bootlegging a recording inside a concert and he could spot them from a mile off, he would club them with his gun or his baton.
If he saw anybody selling Led Zeppelin T-shirts outside the place, because in those days, right, there was an awful lot of bootlegging. The bands didn't own anything.
Yes.
You know, I remember going to concerts and you'd be able to buy T-shirts and this and the other.
That's right.
He was one of the first people that went, no, you can't sell the image of my band unless you pay me. And if you want to pay me, that's fine. If you don't want to pay me, I'm going to shoot you.
Funny
enough. So they all ran off.
Funny enough, where that happened, when Arsenal moved to their new ground, they moved from the...
To the Emirates.
From Highbury to the Emirates. Yeah. Whereas at Highbury, you could walk along Avonall Road, which was where the East Stand was, and just buy, honestly, a picture of Ray Parler, signed by Ray Parler, for £5 in a frame, which Ray had just signed for his mate or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
After you got to the Emirates, no, you couldn't do that. They wouldn't allow any street traders outside the ground selling any memorabilia whatsoever.
To be
whatsoever.
Honest, you can understand from the point of view of the artist. I know people will always say, oh, well, you know, why would you want to spend £100 on a picture when you can get a fake one outside? I mean, I saw this in Hollywood when we were there, because there used to be photographers that would turn up at various openings of things, and they weren't press photographers. They were just photographers that would take pictures of the celebs, and then they would turn up later and get them to sign them.
That's right.
And all the celebs used to do it, and they then realised that these people were selling
them
in shops.
Well,
they thought, well, hang on a second, you're making money out of me. Yeah. I should be getting some of that.
Tiger Woods would spend 20 minutes signing autographs at the end of a golf tournament, and the queue would be endless, and he suddenly realised, hang on, they've come round a second time.
Yeah.
And he realised, again, they were collecting signed pictures of Tiger Woods to sell on what then became the the new website things.
I mean, nobody minds doing that kind of thing. Yeah. Most celebs will do it. But if you think that people are taking the piss, then you stop. And Peter Grant was the first one that said, no, you cannot sell a T-shirt, you cannot sell a scarf, you cannot sell, you know, a beer mat with any likeness of my
That's
band
right.
on it unless you pay me.
That's right. Anyway, just to sum this up, because obviously time is short, Led Zeppelin's vast wealth came to a bacchanalian orgy to rival or possibly outdo what the Rolling Stones were up to at the time.
Oh, they definitely did.
Yeah. There were Rolls-Royce silver clouds every time their plane landed, money-laundering mountains of cocaine.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
On the band's private jet and off it, and we know our mate Mickey
Brennan was on it.
Was on the plane.
We've seen his pictures.
And when Grant began managing Stone, the Crows, and Bad Company, two up and coming groups, along with the stable of Led Zeppelin, he said he organised parties involving strippers dressed as nuns and naked women's writhing in coffins full of jelly.
Yes, that I can imagine him
doing. That's what he likes.
There's a famous story about Led Zeppelin when they played somewhere on the west coast of America, somewhere up near Seattle. They were staying in a hotel which overlooked a river. And apparently Robert Plant and Jimmy Page decided it'd be fun to fish in the river from the hotel room.
Right.
And they fished in the... They asked for fishing rods. Yeah. Somebody went and bought them. And they landed all these trout.
Right.
And they threw them all in the bath.
Yeah.
And they got this woman to writhe around naked in a bath full of fish.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard about that. Not good. Anyway, just to finish this up, right? Yeah. What happened was, in the end, everything just exploded. John Bonham died. The group broke up. Peter Grant went... on with his life of excess, died at the age of 60, which is very young for anybody
young.
These days.
I think he had a good time, though.
But one of the guys who he recruited as his number two, equally hard man, if not harder, was John Biffo Bindon.
Oh, John
Bindon,
John
Bindon, of course.
He was the famous bank robber, wasn't he?
No, he was the famous thug gangland guy who was tried for murdering, I think it was the brother of Barbara Windsor's husband.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Something like that.
He was definitely hooked up with that East End gangster.
Yeah, that's right. Some sort of showbiz connection. Yeah, yeah. When he came out of jail, famously, he was taken to the Mirror Building, John Bindon, because he was having an affair with Vicky Hodge.
Yeah.
Do you remember the model?
I do, yeah.
They went in a room together and stayed there for an hour before coming out to give these interviews and pictures and all that.
Mm.
When she was asked, what were you doing in that room for an hour? She said, we weren't playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
But John Bindon's trick, of course, which he performed allegedly in front of Princess Margaret on the Isle of, you know, Basil's Isle, what was it called?
Isle of Sheppey?
No, Mustique. Or
Mustique,
was it Mustique? Yeah,
yeah.
His party trick was that he had such a large member, he could actually put 10 pint mugs by the handle over his,
like, a load of old
like his knob, you know what I mean?
No, rubbish.
And walk around.
No fucking way. Have you seen the size of 10 glasses?
Well, apparently that was his party trick.
No, I think his party trick has been over-exaggerated.
Well, that was written about. Not written about in this book, by the way. That's something I knew privately.
You just knew that one anyway.
But that was Peter Grant.
I think maybe it was one pint glass. He exaggerated it.
That was Peter Grant and the people he mixed with.
If he could put 10... fucking pint glasses at the end of his knob.
Well,
he wouldn't be able to walk around.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's...
No, I think you got that wrong.
That anyway, apparently...
Listen, as ever...
I mean, the thing is, what you do is, apparently, is they don't all go in the same direction. So...
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
So, yeah, but even so...
So if you spin them around, there's not that much depth, if you see what
I mean. Yeah, there is. 10 of them. You must be joking. Anyway, that's enough of that. Yeah. That was, of course, as ever, the a great Porky review of books.
Yes.
The two books mentioned, one about Napoleon and one about Peter Grant.
That's right.
Both available from all good bookshops.
Oh, yes.
We'll be back with some more of this stuff soon.
Yes. He sums up Napoleon as a rather pathetic creature, bedeviled by massive insecurities, social, intellectual, physical, and most of all, sexual.
He sounds a bit like you. People often accuse you of having a Napoleonic complex.
No.
Now we know why.
No.
Because you are indeed Napoleon.
Yeah. No.
Aren't you Napoleon?
No, I'm not Napoleon at all.
Well, just go through those again.
No.
Just go through them again.
What do you mean to go through them again? I've told you already.
Well, go through those particular...
Bedeviled by massive insecurity, social, intellectual, physical, and sexual.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Yeah.
That's all right.
Well, you can fuck off, mate, when you're trying to make...
I don't need to swear.
Personal judgments on my character and my personality.
I'm just saying that you have a lot of similarities.
No.
I don't know enough about your sexual life to say that that's included. But the other stuff, you do have massive insecurities. It's true.
No, not at all. Such a large member, he could actually put 10 pint mugs by the handle over his, like his knob, you know what I mean?
No, rubbish.
And walk around.
No fucking way.
Have
you seen the size of 10 glasses?
Well, apparently that was his party trick.
No, I think his party trick has been over-exaggerated.
Well, that was written about. Oh,
what's the Mexican song?
You know, Viva España or something like that.
They're Spanish,
though. Well, no. They're Mexican, but I mean, you know, they speak Spanish.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.